With Peter Jeffrey as Blake, Roger Delgado as Wardley, and Douglas Blackwell as Spence. The Alternative Plan.
I told you he was short of money.
Yes?
Colonel Wardley, it's me, George Patton. I've got Mr. Dawson with me.
The American gentleman. Honored to meet you, Colonel.
Thank you.
Come in. Come in.
Here, let me take your coat, will you? Thank you. And your briefcase, Mr. Dawson?
No, that doesn't go out of my possession. It's too valuable.
As you wish. Well, please sit down, will you?
Thank you. Compact little place you have here, Colonel.
Yes, it's not what I've been used to, but one has to cut one's coat, you know. I'm sorry about the state of the room. It misses the woman's touch.
Well, not at all. Patton here told me about your wife. Too bad.
How is she, Colonel?
Not too good, I'm afraid.
You've got her in this new Swiss clinic, I understand.
Yes, that's right.
You know, I was reading about it in Time magazine. They claim some most impressive cures. Cases other doctors have considered hopeless.
Yes. Well, they think they can do something for my wife. This new operation, you know. Yeah. Damn expensive, though. Damn expensive. Oh, but you didn't come here to hear about that. Now, I understand that some of my odds and ends might interest you, Mr. Dawson.
Well, that could well be the case, Colonel. I'm in the market for all forms of militaria, with a particular interest to those pertaining to World War II. Items such as military uniforms, insignia flags, weapons, all sorts of documents, memorabilia, maps, medals.
People actually collect such things?
And pay good money for them. It's a big craze back in the States. Why, I have a client who's got a Sherman and a Panzer tank in his back garden. Can you believe that?
Incredible. I'm afraid my stuff's much more modest. Actually, it's in this box. There might be something there. You know, I haven't really opened it since the war.
May I look, Colonel?
No, but of course. Oh, but I'm forgetting my duties as a host. Can I get you gentlemen a drink?
Say, look at this!
Let me see. Ah, yes. I got that from a German staff officer we captured just outside Tobruk.
Actually signed by Rommel. Fascinating. Yes, please. Whiskey.
Right. And you, Patton?
The whiskey will do me fine.
Well, I've got a bottle in the other room. Excuse me a moment.
Certainly, Colonel. Well, where is it? It
should be there somewhere. Isn't the other stuff any good?
That's junk. They shipped it back to the States in truckloads after the war. I'm going to ask the old fogey outright.
No. I'll spoil everything. Use a bit of subtlety.
Here we are, then. Help yourself to soda, will you? Well, is there anything?
Hold on. What's this?
Oh. I've been wondering where that was. May I have it, please?
Well, it's a medal box. Forgive a collector's enthusiasm, Colonel, but I must look inside. Well, what do you know?
May I have it, please?
Is it yours, Colonel?
Yes.
For valor. The highest award a British sovereign can bestow on a brave man. The Victoria Cross.
I'll take it now, if you don't mind.
I am honored to make your acquaintance, sir.
I don't want to rush you, Mr. Dawson, but I do have another appointment. Look, is there anything there that you'd like to purchase?
Would you consider it an impertinence, sir, if I asked you how much your wife's operation would cost?
Frankly, I don't see it as any of it. But yes, something in the region of £500.
I must be frank, Colonel. Most of this stuff is junk. As for a good cause, I'll stretch my offer to the limit, but I can't make it up any more than £30.
£30.
I doubt if you'll get more than 20 elsewhere, Colonel.
I'm afraid I'd pitch my hopes higher. A great deal higher.
Perhaps it was my fault for being too optimistic, Colonel.
Not at all, my dear fellow, not at all. £30? But look, what about that letter from Rommel?
You wrote a lot of letters, Colonel. I'll give you £500 for your Victoria Cross.
I beg your pardon?
Not enough. All right. £550.
Mr. Patton, would you kindly take your friend out of my house?
You've got a shrewd head for business, sir. My last offer is £600. Take it or leave it. Get out! £600, Colonel. Enough to pay for your wife's operation with enough over for those little luxuries you'd want her to have. £600 in hard cash.
Cash?
That's the way I do business. I took the liberty of coming prepared. Most of my customers prefer cash. It enables them to pay you less income tax, I understand. 600 pounds, sir. Yours for the asking. Nope. Very well, I admire your principles, sir. My regards to your wife. You have to see our welcome, Patton. Goodbye, Colonel.
No, wait.
Yes, sir?
Here, take the damn medal.
It's a deal.
Just give me the money and go.
Certainly. Here we are. £600. It's been a pleasure to do business with you, sir.
If it wasn't for my wife,
but
then...
of course, your motives do you credit. Now, would you give me that money back, please, and put it in this envelope?
I beg your pardon?
Yes. What is this?
I said, put the money in this envelope, please, sir.
But what's happened to your American accident? I see. Some kind of a confidence trick, is it?
Yes, sir. And a very good one. I've never seen it work so well. You might like to look at this. My warrant card. Detective Sergeant Dawson, Fraud Squad. Hey, son! Your partner won't get far, sir. My men are waiting outside. Ah, sounds as if they've got him.
Look here, Dawson. I demand to know what this is all about.
Your privilege, of course, sir. You see, you were too greedy. You should have stopped after selling the first Victoria Cross. You flooded the market, sir, and we've had complaints.
I haven't the faintest idea what you're talking about. And will you please leave those drawers alone?
I should have shown you the search warrant as well. All right. Ah, this looks promising. Very interesting. Can you explain these, sir?
I have never seen them before.
I see. I think the best thing we can do, sir, is to go down to the station and have a little chat. Perhaps we can sort this mystery out.
Come in. Sergeant Dawson, how nice to see you again.
Thank you, sir. This is...
the much-decorated Colonel Wardley. Please sit down, sir.
May I ask what the hell this is all about?
Just one moment, sir. We have certain bureaucratic formalities. Where do I sign for him, Sergeant?
Here, sir.
The paperwork you cause us, Colonel.
Thank you, sir. You'll let us have a PD6 as usual, won't you?
My secretary is typing it now. You can pick it up on the way out.
Right, sir. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Sergeant. If you're hot, Colonel, take off your coat. Look, what place is this? It's not a police station, is it? I'm afraid it isn't. I'm sorry if you're disappointed. I can soon get you to a police station if you wish, but if you cooperate with us, it might not be necessary.
No. If you're not the police, then who are you?
Just a government department.
And who might you be?
My name's Blake. I'm a civil servant.
I see. Well, Mr. Blake, I was told I was being taken to a police station. I accompanied the officer on that understanding, and if this is not a police station, you have no power to hold me, and so I am leaving.
Going somewhere, sir?
Who the hell are you?
He's another civil servant. Burly thug, grade 3.
Kindly get out of my way.
I don't think Mr. Blake has finished to be there, sir.
Quite right, sir. Do come and sit down, Colonel. I'd be most offended if you left now. Good. Thank you, Jones.
Thank you, Colonel, for changing your mind.
I suppose I'd have been beaten up if I hadn't, eh?
Beaten up? Good heavens, no. No. We'd have to fill in so many forms to do that. It far outweighed the pleasure we'd get out of it.
Why have I been brought here?
All in good time.
What sort of country is it, Colonel, that forces a man to sell his hard-won Victoria Cross to buy his wife a few more weeks of life? Bad enough, he'd have to do it once, but three times.
I've got no idea what you're talking about.
You sold your first VC to an American called Minahain, the second to a Dutch gentleman with an unpronounceable name, and the third you tried to sell to Sergeant Dawson this evening.
I hope you've got proof of all this.
I'm pleased to tell you that your hopes are fully justified. Now, in addition to the forementioned, as we civil servants say, Sergeant Dawson found this in your desk drawer. Do you know what it is?
I have never seen it before.
It's a box containing 9 more Victoria Crosses, making 12 in all. Now, that's rather a lot for one man. I did look you up in the Guinness Book of Records, but you weren't there. Beautiful workmanship. The finest copies I've ever seen.
They must have cost a bit.
It's to do with the medals, is it?
No. No, it's you we're interested in, Colonel.
Oh,
by the way, who gave you your promotion? It doesn't seem to have been the army.
I don't follow you.
Well, according to this file I have here, which seems pretty accurate, you were only a captain when they kicked you out in 1950.
I was not kicked out. I resigned.
Well, a fine distinction in the circumstances. I see that the arithmetic you used to balance the mess funds was too advanced for the auditors, to accept. But you don't query the captain bit, do you?
No.
No, the colonel was just a little embellishment of your own. Well, after all, if you've got 12 VCs, why not have the rank to go with it? Right then, Captain, or shall I call you Mister?
As you wish.
We'll make it Mister. Now, can we check on some of the other details in the file? No living relatives?
None?
No. I see you were expelled from a good school.
How far back are you going? If it's ancient history you want, you might like to know that I twice played truant from kindergarten.
That's right. On March the 15th, 1927, and January the 3rd, 1928.
Good Lord, you don't mean to tell... You haven't got that down there.
No. Just my little joke. Don't let them tell you civil servants have no sense of humour. Now, let's get a bit more up to date. Your war service. Taken prisoner of war in 1940, Stalag 72?
Yes.
Yes, but you escaped in 1941. Good for you. Oh, a bit of trouble with the escape, I see.
I was cleared.
So you were. Have you ever been back to Germany since?
No.
You went there a lot before the war.
Ah, things were different then.
Well, a lot safer, I imagine. Do you still speak German as well as you did?
What's all this leading up to?
Soon, Mr. Walter, I'll tell you soon. Could you answer the question?
Yes, I still speak German fluently.
Tell me about the escape.
No. You tell me why I've been brought here.
Because we want you to help us.
Why the hell should I do that?
Oh, because we're such jolly nice people. And because if you don't, we'll hand you straight back to the police.
Innocent men have nothing to fear from the police.
Innocent men? How nice. Always thinking of other people, never yourself. Now, tell me about your escape from Stalag 72.
Well, there's not much to tell. The camp commandant was a chap called Müller.
Heinrich Müller?
Yes, that's right. How did you know?
Carry on.
Apparently, I bore a strong facial resemblance to Müller.
Yes, I've seen photographs. It was most striking.
There wasn't too much difference in our height and build either, so naturally the escape committee saw a way of using this to our advantage. Well, the idea was to get a lot of our lads out in one go. We managed to get hold of a very passable German officer's uniform, the same as Müller's. And with that on, and a pair of those steel-framed Himmler glasses he used to wear, well, I was Müller to a T. As I could speak German, and do a tolerable impersonation of his voice, it didn't take much thinking to devise a plan. We altered and dyed some British Army greatcoats so that they looked like those worn by the German guards. Now, they wouldn't have passed scrutiny in daylight, but they might just get by at night if I was at the head of them in my Müller get-up. Bold march through the main gates, and then once outside, and be every man for himself.
Sounds a very workable plan. How many men were going with you?
Five. That's all the greatcoats we could alter in time.
I see. So six of you made your escape?
No.
Hmm?
No, I thought it over. With six, it was risky. Decidedly risky. On my own, it'd be a piece of cake. So I decided to go out on my own.
And what did your escape committee say to that?
I didn't tell the escape committee. I just went out on my own.
I see.
Now, it's no good looking down your nose at me. It was all a question of common sense. Six of us wouldn't have made it. On my own, it was a cinch. Better one than none, surely.
Go on.
Well, it went off perfectly. The trickiest part was getting onto the German compound, but once there, I was accepted at Müller without a second glance. Salutes and heel kickings flung at me left, right, and center. They couldn't open the main gate quick enough for me. And then I had my biggest stroke of luck. Outside the gate, fully tanked up with the keys and ignition, was Müller's personal car. Well, the guard leaps forward, opens the door, I get in, switch on, calmly drive away, and 3 weeks later I'm in England. And that really is all there is to it.
Was it a big car?
Oh, enormous.
Room for another five?
Now look, I've already said...
Oh, too risky, of course. Yes, my memory. So that's as bad as yours.
What do you mean?
Well, I know you can't be expected to remember every trifling incident after all these years, but I was hoping you would tell me about the accident.
Yes. Yes, I'd have given anything for that not to have happened. I just started up the car and was driving slowly and carefully away from the camp, the way he always did, when who comes stamping across the compound but Müller himself. Just a couple of minutes later and I'd have been cleared away. Anyway, the guard sees him, looks at me, does a double take, and the penny drops. Up comes his rifle and he yells at me to stop. I kick hell out of the accelerator. And I saw a child.
Müller's child?
Yes, his son.
6 years old?
About that, yes. I pumped away at the horn, shouted myself hoarse. But you think he'd get out of the way? No. He just came running smack in the middle of the road straight toward me.
I expect he thought you were his father.
Yes. Yes, I suppose that was it. Müller often took the kid out for a ride. What could I do? A narrow road, trees on either side, no room to swerve. If I'd stopped, they'd have caught me for sure. I had no choice, did I?
You drove straight on.
I had no choice.
You panicked.
I did not panic.
I was afraid you didn't.
Why didn't he get out of the way? He had time to get out of the way.
He rather let you down there, didn't he?
It's no laughing matter. But he could have been killed. As it was...
They had to amputate his leg.
You can imagine how I felt when I heard that. 6 years old. Nice looking kid, too. He should have got out of the way. Now, Müller took it badly. Swore vengeance. Said he'd shoot me personally if ever we met again.
Which is why you found it safer to stay away from Germany.
Of course. After the war, he wrote to the army demanding my address, but they wouldn't give it to him, of course. Still, it's a nasty business. Worrying.
Still, you escaped, and that's the main thing. Have you ever been a member of the Communist Party?
Good Lord, no.
Or any political party?
I know.
Only one party interests you,
Yes?
We're ready for you now, John. Would you come in, please? John is my right-hand man, Mr. Wardley. He dreamt this whole thing up. Oh, but you know him, of course. He's an old friend of yours.
Friend?
Yes, yes. We sent for you on his recommendation. And here he is. Come in, John. You know Mr. Wardley, don't you?
Hello, Wardley.
John Spence. Well, I'll be...
Thought you'd be pleased to see him.
But that's the swine who got me kicked out of the army.
Kicked out? I thought you resigned.
I was given a choice. Resign or face a court-martial. And all over a few lousy pounds.
204 lousy pounds, to be precise.
Paid it all back. Every last penny, and he knew it. There was no need for him to report me. Except out of spite.
And how would you have paid it back? You owe money left, right, and center. To officers, NCOs, and men, rank no bar. They're still waiting to be paid to this day.
Oh, you wouldn't be so hard on him, John, if you knew of his troubles. He's been forced to sell his hard-won medals to buy his poor wife a few weeks of life.
Wife? What wife? He's never married. The only wives he gets involved with are other people.
Which reminds me, John. How is Stella?
Why, you... John!
Sit down. I appreciate your feelings, but if you mark him, you'll ruin everything.
I'm sorry. Stella's dead.
What?
She killed herself shortly after you left her.
I didn't know. I'm sorry.
You do seem to leave a trail of havoc behind you, Mr. Wardley. Would you mind signing this?
What is it?
Just a declaration that you'll be bound by the Official Secret Act. What you learn here must go no further. And the duplicate, please. Bureaucracy gone mad, isn't it? Excellent. Right. Off you go then, John.
Well, next month, as you know, the Chinese Deputy Prime Minister visits London. The triumph for Britain, diplomacy-wise, but security-wise, the biggest headache we've ever had. And to add spice to our troubles, we learned that 4 top-ranking members of Zenith have illegally entered Britain.
What Zenith?
The Special Services Division of Russia's KGB. A sort of strong-armed commando group. So we can take it that Zenith means trouble.
What sort of trouble?
At this stage, we can only guess. They haven't sent their top men to shout slogans. We've got to look on the black side. Now, we're working on the assumption that it's an assassination attempt.
Assassination, eh?
If the Chinese Deputy Prime Minister was killed on British soil, whilst under the protection of Her Majesty's government, China and the West would be permanently and irreparably estranged for all time. The majority opinion of our experts credits Russia with more sense. If the minority are convinced she would risk, in spite of the almost inevitable consequences.
What consequences?
War, Mr. Wardley. World War. It happened once before after an assassination, you may remember. So this is where we come in. Our job, in short, is to prevent such a calamity.
How do you stop an assassination? Do you know where these Zenith men are?
Not all of them, no. But there are one or two things in our favor. Firstly, Zenith only act on direct radio order from Moscow. Secondly, we know the frequency on which they operate. We can monitor every message, every instruction. We could be in a position to stop Zenith at the 11th hour, too late for Moscow to get anyone else over.
So where's the snap? We can't read the messages. They're in code, a code which up to now has proved unbreakable. However, thanks to British ingenuity and an insatiable lust for gold on the part of a certain Russian cipher clerk, we now have the answer. This, the Zenith coding machine.
Looks like a transistor radio.
If you knew what we had to pay to get it, you wonder why you ever went into the wholesale VC business.
Basically, this is a pocket random number computer, capable of coding and decoding all Zenith messages in infinitely variable codes. Our difficulty was that it will only work when it's adjusted to synchronize with the master Zenith computer in Moscow. Now, this is done by punching out a 5-figure numerical sequence on these keys here. Once you've done that, the rest is automatic. As a safety factor, they change the key numbers every 4th week. We've been trying to find out how they transmit the new sequence to their agents so that we could intercept. And at last, we know how. Every month, a member of Zenith travels from Poland to London, ostensibly on a business trip. He meets the number one London man at a prearranged rendezvous and tells him the new key. The number one man then personally passes it on to his number two and so on down the line. It's foolproof. No fear of the information passing into the wrong hands. Nothing in writing, just word of mouth. Interception is impossible.
Well, gentlemen, this is all very interesting, and I'm flattered that you take me into your confidence, but I really fail to see where I come in for this.
Drop the bombshell, John.
The man who comes from Poland each month to pass on the key numbers is Heinrich Müller.
Müller?
We're going to take you to meet him.
Oh, no, you're not.
I'm afraid it's necessary.
You can't force me. Why, he swore to kill me.
I know. And that fact alone makes it difficult for me to think of him as an enemy. But he won't keep his promise, I'm afraid. He won't be able to. He's dying. By the morning, he'll be dead. Oh, damn. Yes?
The minister's here, Mr. Blake.
Oh, no, it's not that time already. Is the good gentleman within earshot, Joan?
No, I put him in the visitor's lounge.
Oh, good girl. Have we replenished our stocks of sherry since his last visit?
No, sir.
Oh, dear, and I promised the Prime Minister I wouldn't give him spirits. You'll have to make do with tea and chocolate biscuits. Joan, let that blonde girl from the canteen serve him. She'll give him something to think about.
Yes, sir.
Good. I'll be out as soon as I can. Sorry about that, Mr. Wardley. We civil servants have to kowtow to our masters, you know.
Where was I? You said Miller would be dead by the morning.
Alas, yes. Sad, but true. We've known about him for some time, haven't we, John?
Yes. He closely watched all his little business trips to London. He always stays at the same place, the Kentford Hotel, just off Lancaster Gate. We've bugged his room, tapped his phone, and followed him everywhere. Nothing came our way, though, until last night.
What happened last night?
He flew in from Poland, as usual, and booked into the hotel. The receptionist said he didn't look too good. At 2 o'clock this morning, his bell rang furiously, and the night porter went up to see what he wanted. He found Muller collapsed on the floor. The porter phoned for a doctor, and we intercepted the call. We sent our own chaperone. Muller has had a very bad heart attack, and he's dying. The doctor gives him 8 hours at the most. He's in a deep coma, but he's been muttering over and over again. A five-figure group of numbers.
Zenith code key.
Exactly. Hmm. The vital information we want handed to us on a plate.
You see our difficulty, though, don't you, Mr. Wardley? Muller hasn't passed the key over to the number one man yet. He's not due to do it until 10:30 tonight. If he doesn't make the rendezvous, the number one man will contact Moscow, and Moscow will send someone else out with another key number, and we'll be right back where we started.
So, what's the answer?
By public demand, we want you to repeat your outstanding impersonation. Your fans demand it.
Now I'm beginning to see. What exactly would I have to do?
Simply keep the rendezvous, pass over the key numbers, and return to Miller's hotel. Tomorrow morning, Miller is found dead in bed. Natural causes, heart attack, nothing to cause our friends the slightest suspicion. And for the vital month, we'll be able to read every word sent to and from the Zenith department.
Supposing I agreed, what would I get out of it?
Oh, riches beyond diamonds. The thanks and forgiveness of a grateful nation. And the knowledge that World War III has been postponed.
Not quite enough, gentlemen. Not quite enough.
Oh?
No. My tender for the job as outlined is £1,000.
What? Out of the question, I'm afraid.
Well, take it or leave it. If you think you can find someone else who looks and talks like Miller and who can speak fluent German all before 10:30 tonight, then good luck to you. My price is £1,000. And considering the scarcity value, I think it's dirt cheap.
Yes?
The minister's on his second cup of tea, sir.
Yes, it's reaching crisis point in here as well, Joan. I'll be out as soon as I can. As you have implied, Mr. Wardley, time is not on our side, but we'd be pretty poor civil servants if we didn't plan for all eventualities. We've got another chap standing by. He'd pass the Miller at a pinch, not as good as you, but he might get away with it. However, since, like Nurse Edith Cavell, you feel that patriotism is not enough, I'll spell out my final offer. For about 30 minutes work, with no risks attached, I'm authorized to pay you the sum of £300, half a Victoria Cross, as you say in the trade. In addition, I'm authorized to inform you that the police will be instructed to drop their present charge against you. Well, that's the proposition. There can be variations. But if I'm to use the other man, I must know now, so a straight yes or no, please.
I'll do it for £500.
Then that means no. All right, John, get on to the police and let them take him away. He's all there.
All right. You win. Never let it be said that I failed my country in its hour of need. £300. And, could you please make it cash? I've fallen out with my bank.
Yes, cash payable as soon as you've done the job. Joan!
Yes, sir?
Take Mr. Wardley down to the audio cubicle, would you? I want you to listen to some recent tapes of Miller's voice. It might have changed a little since your last impersonation.
Now I'll go with you.
No, hold on a minute, would you, John?
All right, Wardley. I'll join you later.
I can hardly wait.
All right, lead on, Joan.
Ooh, what a nasty piece of work.
Reminds me of the last minister but one. And how's the amnesia, John?
Amnesia?
You know damn well what I'm talking about. Why the hell wasn't I told that your wife killed herself over Wardley? Why the hell wasn't I told?
I thought it would complicate matters, sir.
How right you were! Oh, all right, Joan, I'm coming. There isn't even time to bawl you out. I should take you off this job.
Yes, I'm not going to do anything to jeopardize the mission, sir. I promise you.
All right, John.
Oh, God, I'm coming! I'm coming!
Must you drive so fast, Spence? Kill both of us before we get there.
I know what I'm doing.
Funny about Stella, you know. I just can't believe it. Who'd have thought she'd have done a thing like that?
That's the hotel coming up on our left.
Oh.
We'll park in the side street.
So I'll be seeing Miller again after all these years, eh? You're quite sure he's unconscious.
Yes.
And he got out of the way.
I don't suppose anyone's watching the hotel, but we'll go in the back way, just in case.
Oh, it's you, sir. Come in.
Everything all right?
Yes, sir. The doctor's here.
Ah. How's the patient, doctor?
As well as can be expected for a dying man, he should be in hospital.
No. He's got to die here.
He'll do that all right.
When?
4 hours at the outside. Might hang on a bit longer, you can't tell.
Anyway, there's no point in my staying. I'm not allowed to do anything.
If he's still alive tomorrow morning, let me know, and I'll look in again.
All right, Doctor. Use the back stairs, would you?
I always do. I know my place.
We'll be here for at least half an hour, Jones, so if you feel like popping out for a cup of tea...
Oh, wouldn't say no, sir. Come along, Doctor.
Yeah, fine.
Don't hang back, Wardley. Take a good look at him. He can't hurt you.
He's aged.
You both have.
It's funny him going so anti-British. He was quite decent to us POWs.
4 months after losing his leg, his son also lost his life. He and his mother were killed in an air raid. What do you expect?
Yeah. Now, but he should have got over it by now.
We'll never get over it.
Huh?
We've got to move. Put this on. It's his suit. It'll fit you. We've checked the measurements.
Yeah, hasn't he got anything better than that?
It's his only one. He always wore it.
Yes, and slept in it by the look of it. All right. Chuck it over.
Wait for the rest. Shirt, vest, underpants.
What a complete change of clothes just to pass on a few numbers.
No harm in being thorough. What size shoes do you take?
9.
I thought so. You will find these a bit tight. They're 8.5.
Well, I'll wear my own, thank you. I'm fussy about shoes.
No. You can't get those flashy brown brogues in Poland.
So he bought them since he arrived.
He's barely been here 24 hours. Your shoes are at least 2 months old.
Such crushing logic.
All right. What are you doing?
What does it look like? I'm transferring the stuff from my pockets to his suit.
Haven't you got any sense? I'll give you the stuff to put in his pockets, his own stuff. I've kept it separate.
You know, Stella always said that the thing she hated most about you was your smug, arrogant thoroughness. No rough stuff, old boy. No bruises, remember?
You can get changed in here. I've got things to do in the other room.
Well, you're not going
to
leave me here alone with him, are you?
Does he still frighten you? Why shouldn't I leave you alone? You left Stella alone.
Oh, but if it makes you feel any happier, I'll leave the door open. You can't forget her, can you? You know, she wanted to go back to you at first. Now, that was a challenge to the old vanity. I couldn't have that. All the lies I had to tell her. I say, this collar's a bit on the tight side, isn't it? Ah. Phew, done it. Yes, she made me promise I'd never leave her. Well, you know me. Anything for a quiet life.
No, leave!
What happened?
Good God. Get Mr. Blake over here.
You killed him.
Just get Mr. Blake over here.
Yes, sir.
You know, old boy, for one horrible moment, I thought you were aiming at me.
Well, Doctor, is he dead?
A bullet through the temple? What do you expect?
I expected him to die of a heart attack, you diagnosed, Doctor. I expected him to be in a deep coma. I did not expect he'd be lying there doggo all the time, that he'd secreted a gun in the bed, and that he'd have shot Mr. Wardley in the back if John wasn't quick enough to shoot him first.
Yes, you saved my life, Brent. Thank you.
Don't rub it in. He's got to live with it for the rest of his days. Well, Doctor, in the light of recent events, do you want to revise your diagnosis?
I don't understand it. I shall have to do a post-mortem.
Well, first things first, get one of our ambulances. I want him out of here.
Yes, all right.
You haven't come out of this too well either, Jones. You were supposed to have searched the room thoroughly. How did you miss the gun?
I didn't search the bed there. He was supposed to be dying. I didn't want to disturb him.
Not the way to get your regrading, is it? I'm afraid you're seeing us at our worst, Mr. Wardley, but from now on it'll get better. We'll have to hurry if you want to make the rendezvous at 10:30.
But we can't go on with it, surely.
Why ever not?
Well, Muller's got a bullet in his head. He'll never pass his death off as accidental now.
Like the Boy Scouts, a civil servant must always be prepared. We have to plan for all eventualities. And because there was a slim chance something like this just could happen, we devised an alternative plan. We've just put it into effect.
Oh?
It won't affect you, so don't worry about it. You just carry on as we discussed. Perhaps you could finish getting dressed in view of the time.
Right, I'll do that.
Quiet word, John.
Yes, sir? I don't like it. If Miller wasn't in a coma, then he heard everything. He could have got word out to his Zenith contact.
Not a chance. We've been watching him like hawks.
Didn't stop him hiding the gun, though, did it? If he did get word out, Wardley could well cop the next bullet.
And I think we've got to take that chance.
Yes, I agree. We won't tell Wardley, though. It might dull the edge of his enthusiasm.
Well, how do I look? Put the glasses on. Oh, my word, yes, that is superb.
Muller to a T. You've not put anything of your own in the pockets.
No, I have not.
You don't mind if I check? Good. Here's Muller's stuff. The wallet, comb, and passport. They go in the inside pocket.
Now on, Mr. Wardley, until you get back here, you must think and act as Heinrich Muller, right?
Right. Think of it as a massive con job, and you won't go wrong. These go in the left pocket. The left.
Does it really matter?
Yes, it does. And here's some loose change for your trousers pocket.
You know what you've got to do?
You've been through it enough times.
Gratify my whim and run through it once more.
The pen and pencil in the top jacket pocket.
Well, I leave here. I hand my key to the reception clerk. I walk to the underground and take a tube to Bethnal Green. At Bethnal Green, I cross the road, walk towards the museum. Just before I reach the museum, a chap called Walters will approach me.
How will you recognize him?
Well, you've shown me his photograph. He'll ask me, in German, if I can tell him the telephone number of the German embassy. I will reply, in German, and give him the code sequence, which is 62754. He thanks me and goes on his way. Then I turn back and return by tube to the hotel, where you will be waiting with £300 in cash.
First class. Right then, you ready?
Yes. No, he's not. His shoes. He hasn't changed his shoes.
But look, it'll be dark. Who's
going
to notice? We can't take chances, Mr. Wardley. The people we're dealing with are trained to spot things like that. If they suspected you were a fake, you might not be using the return half of your tube ticket. And I have to go through all the paraphernalia of getting our accounts department to take the £300 back. So take off the brown brooch, etc.
Well, I hope there's not too much walking and dinner. I say, they're dead man's shoes, aren't they? I'm stepping into dead man's shoes, but that's unlucky.
Only for the dead man, surely. Jones, give Mr. Wardley a drink. He looks a bit shaken. You'll find a half a bottle of whiskey in my briefcase.
Briefcase, sir?
Oh, yes.
We get it cut price from our staff shop, Mr. Wardley. One of the little perks that decided me on a civil service career.
I've overfilled it a bit, sir.
Oh, look, Al!
Sorry, sir. I do beg your pardon.
All over his suit. You are clumsy, sir.
Let me wipe it off for you.
No. Leave it. It doesn't matter.
Pour Mr. Wardley another one, Jones, and have one yourself. You look a bit shaky, too.
Thank you, sir, but I'd better not. Here's one, sir.
Thank you. Oh, that's better.
I'm sorry about the suit.
It's all right. Doesn't mind, you know. Well, I'd better be off.
Yes, Miller's never been late.
Now, you'll
You'll have the money waiting.
Every penny. Good luck.
Thank you.
You were very lavish with my whiskey, Jones. Now, what do I have to claim that on? C-22?
No, sir, that's only for lunches. You'll want a C-24, Mr. Lane.
Of course, yes.
Who would that be?
The doctor with the men for the bodies.
Oh, yes. Let them in, Jones. Would you? Then you'd better be off. Wardley should be far enough ahead by now.
Yes, sir. Come in, Doctor. Goodbye, sir.
Goodbye, Jones. Come on in, Doctor. Get your chap to put the stretcher in the other room.
Right.
You men had better start dressing him. You will find the clothes on the chair.
I'll give you a hand.
When you're ready for his shoes, I've got them here, the brown robes. I think I'll leave this to you, John. I find it all rather macabre.
Well, you've got the worst bit. Why don't you have a swig of whiskey?
No, I'd better not. They might want me to take a breathalyzer test. Oh, it is a nuisance, all this. We've got some people coming over tonight, and I particularly didn't want to be late.
Jones to control. Jones to control. Over.
Come in, Jones.
I'm by the railway bridge, sir. Wardley's a few yards ahead of me. There's a man approaching who could be the contact.
Well, is it?
I'm not... Yes, it is. Wardley stopped. They're talking. I think it's going all right, sir. He's passed the message. The other chap's thanking him. Wardley's turning. He's coming back.
Are you sure it was the contact?
No doubt at all, sir. Wardley's just passed me.
Did he see you?
No, he's reached the curb. He's about to cross the road. Over and out.
All right, all right. Keep back, please.
Did anyone see it happen? I did. He lurched right in front of the car. Didn't give the driver a chance. Just if you ask me.
He reeks of whiskey. Let the ambulance men through, please.
What have you got for us this time? Oh.
How is he?
He's at it. Anyone else hurt? And what about the driver?
Are you all right, sir?
Oh, yes, yes. I'm all right, thank you. I'm just a bit shaken.
Are you sure? They can take you to the hospital for a checkup?
No, I'm all right. I couldn't miss him there. He stepped straight in front of me.
Yes, yes, sir, yes. That's what this gentleman says. I don't think you need blame yourself.
Oh, just the one, then?
Yes, yes. You're taking him straight to the mortuary, will you?
That's right. Do we know who he is?
Yeah, a foreigner. A chap called Muller. Here on a visit.
Perhaps we'd better let his embassy know.
Oh, we do that automatically, sir. Oh, by the way, sir, just for the record, what is your occupation?
Didn't I say? I'm civil servant.
How did it go last night?
Perfectly, John. An unfortunate accident.
We got the body back to Wardley's flat, all right. His cleaner found it this morning. The police are convinced it's suicide.
No suspicion it's the wrong body.
No, sir. I'm going to make the formal identification as an old friend. Oh, by the way, the radio room reports the new Zenith code is already in use. We're reading everything.
You didn't see the paper this morning, then?
No.
The Chinese Deputy Prime Minister's visit has been called off. So it's all been rather a waste of time. Except for you. Hmm? You'll let me have your resignation, won't you?
Resignation? I don't think I understand.
I think you do. If you hadn't shot Muller, we wouldn't have needed to put the alternative plan into effect. And Wardley would still be alive today.
I had no choice.
Didn't you?
The doctor did a post-mortem on Muller, just for his own satisfaction.
He did die of a heart attack, you know. Some 5 minutes before you shot him. So I fail to see how he could have been sitting up with a gun at Wardley's back. Your resignation, John, by the end of the day. I've got a draft here, the sort of thing I like. Brief and to the point.
Yes, sir?
If you'd like to come in now, Joan, I've got some letters to dictate. And you can put Wardley's file away. I've finished with it.